Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everyone, welcome. You know, I'm always amazed, I'm always surprised, I'm always intrigued, and then I'm always shocked. And then I'm forever grateful. I wonder what would happen if PETA didn't exist. I'm just curious. Because when I think about what the organization and its absolutely dedicated staff is doing, every conversation I have with them, I ask myself, what would happen if they weren't here? Today, 30th anniversary, Free the Animals. 30th anniversary. Do you all, can you just wrap your mind around this for a minute? And if you're wondering, who are they? What are these folks? Free the Animals, 30th anniversary, by an organization that stepped up in a world where nobody else was. PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. You all know from the very beginning, I don't care how far back you go, whether you have watched top athletes completely abuse their dogs, or you've seen your neighbor, or you've seen experimentation in the world, or you've seen fill in your own blanks. But today, Free the Animals, 30th anniversary edition with the foreword by Joaquin Phoenix, who has obtained the movie rights to the story. Of course he has. Of course he has. And what we're talking about today, you're going to get from Dr. Emily Trunnell, Senior Scientist for PETA, because we want all y'all to know that this originally released edition is now coming back with the power and a vengeance. If we are not aware of what the heck has been going on, and we think it is not going on anymore, that the research and the cruelty of animals does not exist anymore in the United States of America and around the world. After this conversation, I hope you'll get on board. Dr. Trunnell, thank you for joining me here today.
Thank you so much for having me, Pat.
I don't know if I gave you the right pronunciation of your name, but I kind of like the way that sounded.
That's fine.
Look, I'm not kidding when I say, even today, when I speak with people and I say, I just had a great interview with Dr. Emily of PETA. They're like, who? And I love that you are bringing back, bringing out, bringing to the forefront and bringing Free the Animals. I mean, you know, when I think about the work of Ingrid Newkirk's book, you know, Free the Animals, revelations, yes, but I want to hear from you. Have we learned anything? And is this 30th anniversary and what y'all doing now more important now than it's ever been? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's at least equally important. So the 30th anniversary edition has a new afterword, which I was very honored to be asked to write. And in the new afterword, we go into whether or not the experiments described in the book are still happening today. And PETA has been able to end some of the experiments, but there are many that are still going on today. And these are things like decompression experiments on animals, giving them the bends, traumatic brain injuries, blindness experiments. This is still a critical issue because hundreds of millions of animals are still used in experiments and killed in the U.S. every year.
I want to ask you this question. I mean, you have to be over the moon about Joaquin Phoenix's interest in this. Of course he is, right? But you have to be over the moon that we may be bringing something, or he may be bringing something to the forefront that will shock people. You know, here's what I know. I didn't realize what was happening in the meat industry until I saw some films, and it changed me forever. I want to ask you this question. Where are we now? Give us some updates. What is happening with research? And, you know, here's the shocking thing. The only thing you can talk about is what you know. I can't even imagine what's going on that you don't know about, right?
That's part of the problem. You know, in the 80s and the early 90s, when, you know, the events of the book were happening, there was little worry from the experimenters that anyone would care what they're doing, or that they were going to get caught. Now, you know, since PETA and the Animal Liberation Front exposed so much of what was happening, they're much more secretive. So, but PETA, we file public records requests, we do undercover investigations. You know, our mission is to, you know, get these experiments out of the basement laboratory and into the public eye so that the public can really see what's happening, because they actually fund a lot of it with their tax dollars, which I think a lot of people would be horrified to find out.
Mm. Let's talk about the efficacy for a minute. You know, I think folks are under the impression, and I really do believe folks still are under the impression, that the only way to go is animal testing. But we're going to talk about what happened with the vaccines of COVID-19, number one. But even more importantly, there's an illusion out there that if we go through these extensive testing using animals, that we are going to be better off or safer. What is the update on that and the research practices from where you sit?
So the current statistics, that is the message that we're sold, right? We have to do these animal tests first, or people would be harmed by these drugs. People, you know, we're trying to make this whole process safer for humans. But these drugs, new drugs that go into clinical trials, have gone through animal testing to see if they're safe, to see if they're effective. And those animal tests fail to predict what happens in humans 95% of the time. So those results aren't actually relevant. So when a drug does go into human clinical trials, it's risky, because they're relying on data that 95% of the time doesn't apply to humans. So this message that animal tests make the drug discovery process and the testing process safer is just not true. In some cases, drugs that have been very safe in animals have gone on to kill people. And, you know, we see this happen, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. COVID-19 vaccine development is a great example. So in that case, there was such an urgent need for this new drug that the regulators and the pharmaceutical companies agreed that they could go ahead and start the human trials and do the animal testing alongside of it. And that was really more to just kind of check a box to say that we did the animal tests. But they knew that these tests aren't effective and don't really give us results that we can rely on. So that they went ahead with the human trials in that case. And if they can do it, then, you know, we can do it for other diseases, because those are also critically important, and people are waiting for those.
You know what's so interesting about this conversation? I know it's not part of this particular interview today. I've always been baffled, because I have watched friends and family die. And I had a friend, least likely to ever, ever, ever get cancer. It's an Olympic athlete. You know what I'm saying? Just a totally least likely. She begged. She pleaded. She was willing to sign any document on the planet to be part of some of these trials. We're caught in this really, I call it an ethical conundrum. And yet at the same time, you nailed it. People are waiting. I want to ask you this other question, though. I mean, how much of this basic research that involves animals, how much of it actually is leading to treatments for humans, and what is the financial, how should I say it, backdrop of this?
So the majority of basic research experiments are funded, and when we talk about, so there's two different things we're kind of talking about. One mm-hmm. is drug testing, and that has a, you know, overall a 95% failure rate. Some in some areas it's 100%. But basic research is more of that research that's done for your listeners, for, you know, just kind of learning more about biology and diseases without really a specific drug in mind. And in that case, you know, these curiosity-based experiments, they fail 90% of the time. So this number is pretty consistent throughout. 90% of findings from basic research fail to lead to anything meaningful for humans. And the National Institutes of Health is the largest funder of these kinds of experiments in the world. Mm-hmm. And they, despite this 90% failure rate, they give roughly half of their annual budget, which is $40 billion, to animal experiments still, despite decades of knowing these statistics.
Well, this last part, and of course, this question really goes to the solution. I want to make sure everybody knows how to find out about PETA. It's really simple. It's PETA.org, PETA, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA.org. I want to go to the solution because I know every conversation I have with you all, there's a solution. There's something you all are doing. And today, it is talking about PETA's research modernization deal and the strategy behind the plan. Wow. Talk about this.
Right. PETA, our mission is to make sure that, you know, hopefully sooner, but at least in another 30 years, you know, we won't be talking about how these experiments are still happening. The research modernization deal is our plan to make this happen. It was developed by scientists. It's endorsed by the National Medical Association and the National Hispanic Medical Association. You know, physicians are really a lot on board with this issue and this plan. You know, they're the ones who are treating patients who don't have effective drugs with few side effects to prescribe to their patients. And the research modernization deal is the first actual comprehensive strategy to phase out the use of animals in biomedical research.
What excites you most when you think about this? I mean, it's kind of like, wow, of course PETA has come up with something, but this is not just a something. This is a strategic plan. This is an action plan. This is a definite goal in mind. This has backing support. What excites you most, and what obstacles do you see?
It really excites me how much support we get on this issue, you know, across the aisle. Like many, you know, people have disagreements on animal issues or on other social justice issues, but almost everyone is in agreement that we should not be using animals for experiments, especially when there are other options. And so what excites me is the support for this effort and, you know, just the fact that, you know, I work for PETA. I care very much about animals and want to eliminate their suffering, but I'm also a scientist. And when I was getting my training as a scientist, I did experiments on animals. And I found out firsthand that how broken the system is, how people can do really anything they want with no oversight, but also how, you know, the experiments that are being done are not relevant to people. And so I'm really excited about the fact that we can move in a direction that's better for patients, that will get us cures and treatments faster. And that's even, you know, personalized medicine. Some of these new devices can use our own individual cells to research and to test drugs. So that's all very exciting to me as someone who cares about animals and as a scientist.
Yeah. One thing I know is that you are a team of people, that you're not just thinking about this once in a while. Your waking thought is about this. Your research is about this. You know, everything that you and I are talking about at a very quick level here is backed up by years and years and years and years. And, you know, even the original story that goes way, way back, and talking about monkeys and talking, I mean, there's just so much that this is based on. I want to talk with you for a minute about Joaquin Phoenix's involvement in this. Most of us know who he is. Most of us know about his position on animal cruelty. But that too has to be somewhat exciting to really see that you're now getting, and seriously getting, the attention of so many people in the world that can do something about it. What is your sense of that?
It's hugely inspiring to me, and exciting, because these are people who, they have the public attention. They could use their platform to draw attention to a number of different issues, but Joaquin is a major one. There are other celebrities as well, but Joaquin's, when he gets the public eye, he is talking about animal rights, and he, you know, in his Oscar acceptance speech, in the movies he produces and creates, he is getting this message out there. And because he's such a, you know, charismatic person and a great actor, people want to listen to him. So I think that's just hugely inspiring that people are willing to use their platform to draw attention to this issue. And he's so supportive of animal rights on so many fronts.
Thank you for today. I want to ask you this last thing. What's your personal message? What did we leave out? And how can people jump in and give you all some support?
Our listeners can visit PETA.org to get more information about the 30th anniversary edition of Free the Animals, you know, where they can buy it online. Also check your local bookstores and libraries. And also visit PETA.org to learn more about PETA's research modernization deal and our plan to end animal experiments.
And what's your personal message?
My personal message is buy cruelty-free, support PETA, and talk to your congresspeople about these issues. Let them know that you care about animals.
Yeah. And by the way, tell your friends, because I think friends and family, they're just not on board. Remind people that this is still a thing, and it's a serious thing. Thank you so much, Dr. Emily. Thank you all. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharged phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today. Or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness. Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Welcome. You know, many of you have heard us talk about, especially when Linda comes out to visit, we go around to Goodwill. Why do we do that? Well, I'm not going to answer that question, but I want to talk to you about new Goodwill. National poll amid pandemic. Majority of current job seekers say they lack skills needed to access good jobs. Now, here's what I know about this. I know that in the industry I'm in, that's why we're willing to train people. Stephen Preston's joining us here today, President and CEO of Goodwill Industries, and Eileen Paris is joining us here today. Welcome to both of you. Thanks for joining me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having us.
You know, Stephen, let me start with you. I mean, this is like hot on the radar for you. I want you to give us a little backdrop about, one, how this showed up for you, and two, you know, what the role of, as CEO of Goodwill Industries International, is all about. But why did this, like, get on your radar?
Well, this is a really important question. Today in the job market, we have 11.5 unfilled jobs. And in many cases, employers are saying, I can't find people with the skills to fill those jobs. Many of them are good paying jobs that are available. On the other hand, we have about 6 million unemployed. It's a little bit over half that number. So what we hear is, gosh, anybody who wants a job can get a job. It's such a hot job market. What we don't see is what's behind that number. So you have 6 million unemployed, but if you add people who are underemployed, not able to find full-time work, and add in people who are not earning sufficient wages to support themselves and their families, that number grows to over 20 million. So what we see in the job market statistics doesn't really tell us about the challenges that people are having in their lives. So what we did is we went out to talk to people throughout the country to say, what is your experience with the job market? Are you looking for something? Are you in your ideal job today? And if not, what are you doing about it? And what we found overwhelmingly for people that are unemployed, for people that are looking for jobs, or for people who say, I'm not in an ideal job today, all of them said that the biggest factor for them in moving forward was a lack of skills needed for the jobs that are in the market. Many people said, we actually looked at those job descriptions for the jobs we wanted, and we didn't apply because we didn't have the requirements on the job, you know, on the requirement. So the irony is there's huge opportunity for well-paying jobs and huge need for people who want those jobs, but we are not bridging the gap to help people get the skills they need to compete for those jobs. And then the last thing we said is, well, if you could get access to free classes or other kinds of support to get those jobs, would you take advantage of it? Mm. And people said, yes, we would take advantage of it. And we need to be able to figure out how to solve this issue, because the opportunity is there, not only people, which is really what we care about, but also about corporations who need to fill those jobs to be competitive, which is important for all of us.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, especially when you're dealing in a workforce where you may have a lot of gig workers or 1099s now, that's really what's happening. There are a lot of 1099 jobs. And what happens with the 1099 jobs is an employer looks at it and said, I need A, B, C, and D. And if you don't have it, an employer hits the button. And that is a mistake, because there are a lot of people out there that are willing to learn. And, you know, that is our policy here. It is rare to find somebody to fit the jobs we have. And so we provide a forum and leave it up to folks to learn. I got to tell you, we just brought on somebody new, and she is just rocking it, picking things up left and right. And, you know, why is this so important? Eileen, from your perspective, you know, where do you weigh in on this?
I think it's important to really understand what people are looking for, because skills can be trained, but soft skills cannot. I think there are a lot of individuals who are hard worker, eager, passionate, and committed. And I think we really look at skills rather than the soft skills of those individuals who are committed and have these lived experience that can definitely add to the value of the culture of the organization, and at the same time, really excel and find a career of loyal employees.
Tell me about loyal, because I got to tell you, I love the word loyal. I love the word loyal employees. I'm so glad you brought that up, because, you know, my friends say to me, girlfriend, you are such an optimist. You studied loyal employees. You worked for a company 25 years. You're so old school. You're like really ancient. But I love that you use that word. I think it is such a mistake in the academic world, in the research world, in the business world, when we start to say loyalty to companies and loyalty to employees doesn't exist anymore. You brought it up, Eileen, so I gotta ask you to talk to it, okay?
Of course. I think it all starts with culture. And culture is about how much do you invest in your people? Is it professional development, training, making sure that their career goals are going to be met where they are and where they will grow in the company? And it's really taking the time to mentor and coach them to get to those skills that they need. And it's all those things in between, because a lot of times it's not just typing skills. It's not just about making sure you get on at work on time. It's really about, I want want to pursue more because you saw the potential in me. So now I get to see the potential in myself. Mm-hmm. It's that intrinsic value that we can put into people that they start to believe. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the values of goodwill is potential.
Mm-hmm. I totally get it. I want to get back. Thank you. That is like the punchline here. Stephen, I want to get back to you. I know we've got a couple of minutes left. First of all, you know, goodwill.org for everybody out there, goodwill.org. But then add this on, goodwill.org/rising-together. What's going to happen when we go there, Stephen? What are people going to find?
Well, so if you go to goodwill.org, there are a number of things you're going to find. First of all, if you're a person who is potentially in the job market, you will find online training classes. You can get basic digital skills support right on our website. You will find sort of mini courses on how to do your job search. How do I write a resume? How do I prepare for an interview? And the third thing you can find is how to apply for a job in my local market. We actually have that partnership with Indeed.com, the largest job search engine in the world, where you can go online and apply for, find jobs in your local market and actually apply to them through our website. If you're interested in learning more about the Rising Together initiative, which is basically a coalition of Goodwill and other corporate partners, you can see who we're working with in your communities to be able to provide that support more effectively. So, and the last thing I would point you to on goodwill.org is if you are looking for resources in your local market, if you want to know where there are stores, if you want to know where there are training centers or other kinds of support, you can actually find what's available in your local market. I'm thrilled that Eileen is in the Seattle market, and her team provides support to people locally who are looking for help. And you can find people like Eileen and other people around the country who are committed to supporting you in your local market.
Yeah. I mean, I got to tell you something. I don't know, Eileen, what you're doing here, but I got to tell you, Goodwill in the Seattle market, rocking it. I mean, honestly, I visit on a regular basis. We contribute on a regular basis. We believe in, you know, the recycling of things and making things. Not only are the Goodwill in our areas outstanding, but the staff is courteous. They are trained. They know how to help you. I mean, honestly, I think every center around should take a little bit of advice from them and watch how they move people through really long lines really quickly. So Eileen, my hat goes off to you. The last thing I want to say, and I want to thank you both for joining me. I know you've got to run. The other thing I want to say is you both are on top of the fact that women, and especially Latina community, has been affected by the pandemic in ways that we don't even understand yet. And I must say to both of you, I am doing my best. Eileen, just to you, I am doing my best to have a conversation with Senator Patty Murray. Because if we do not support the people in our area, the small businesses, how we've been hit by the pandemic, we are now known as the invisible. Thank you both. Goodwill rocks, rising together. Thank you so much for everything you're doing.
Thank you, Dr.
Thank you for having us.
Appreciate it so much.
All right. We're going to take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.